Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Mammoths at the Gates by Nevo, narrated by Cindy Kay. Chapter 1. And that was how we got the moon back up the mountain and into the sky, and no one was ever the wiser. You can tell it was us, because when you see the moon's face turned out fully, the dark marks are where the youngest sister kissed her before she said goodbye. The woman steering the cart winked and tapped her lips, painted a dark and shiny green-black. And she made another note in their book, both the end of the story and that the woman's lip paint hid darker marks underneath, visible only when one was close enough to see. Tattoos, maybe? Or very fine scarification? Is there a good way to ask without being rude? She was still pondering the question when the woman nodded, pulling her team of oxen to a halt. And here we are, Cleric. This is where I turn north, and you shift for yourself. Oh, thank you. I'm sorry, I was listening to your story and I missed the signs. Chi climbed down from the wagon, dragging their pack with them and settling it on their shoulders. They turned to bow their thanks formally, but the woman peered over their shoulder towards the path behind them, less a road than a foot track into the sparse woods. I would have missed it myself if the road hadn't widened to a turnaround. This is some desolate country you all have here in the west. Where did you say you were headed again? Chi couldn't help smiling. Not when they were so close. When the earth smelled right and the cicadas filled the air with a thunderous buzz. In another few weeks, the cicadas would all be dead, and the novices would sweep up drifts of golden husks to be crushed and added to the compost bins. I made it back in time for the cicadas, they thought. I'm going home to the Singing Hills Abbey, they said. From the Red Road, it was another day's walk to the Abbey gates. Properly, it was closer to a day and a half, but she knew that there was a warm bed, food, and family waiting for them at the end, and they pushed on through the thinning light. They knew these woods, and while there was no such thing as a safe wilderness, they knew its dangers. Candle ghosts and echo spirits that would lead them in circles, shy wolves that could grow hungry. Cleric Pan would say that this is exactly how you get led into the woods and eaten by a wolf. But Cleric Pan also told us that the castle at Gepali can lift from its foundations and fly. It probably can't, and I probably won't be eaten by a wolf either. Still, it had been 4 years since they had last made this trip. Once, they almost mistook a deer track for the path, and once they heard the voice of the divine calling to them for help. Home was still home, they thought as they walked, and it was a mistake to let nostalgia convince them that it was completely safe. The deer track had cost them some time, however, and the sun was below the horizon when they broke the tree line to the plains. Across the rolling green, they could see the walls of the Singing Hills Abbey, ancient and scarred with the marks of old conflicts, and so beloved that it made Chi's heart hurt. They sniffled a little, and then they blinked when they saw a pair of dark shapes before the twin timber gates. Did they build sheds on the green? Did a traveling show or a weapons dealer arrive with their covered wagons for some reason? Then one of the dark shapes moved, its lumbering gait and the round shape of its head unmistakable. It turned so it stood fully in the dying light of the day, and uncurled its short trunk to arch back like a snake against its head before it bellowed, a shrill trumpeting sound that carried to where Chi stood and beyond, likely all the way back to Red Road. Mammoth, Chi thought, frozen. Mammoths at the gates. Chapter 2. From the tree line, Chi paced and thought about what they should do. What they could do. They could turn around and try to find out what was going on from the town up the river. They could try the postern gate, which was less a secret than it was simply inaccessible, hidden along a ridge, a relic of the time when the abbey actually had been a real military fortification. I heard there was the cave-in a few years ago. They meant to dig it out, but did they ever? I could try it. G's head jerked up at a low hooting, two slurred hollow notes, the second higher and softer. It was as familiar as their own face, and they turned with relief and no small amount of joy. The hoopoe in the tree behind them was male by his bright coloration and larger than most of the nation that lived in the Singing Hills aviary, almost the size of a crow or a young chicken. He gazed down at Chi curiously from his perch in the tree, twisting his head back and forth. "Well, well," he said, "what a time for you to make your way home." Cleverness himself. Yes, I seem to have chosen a bad time, haven't I?
Never a bad time to come home. I'm happy to see you. You need a haircut.
Chi passed a hand over the 2 inches of hair on their head, grinning in spite of themselves. The barber in the last town I was in ran off with the circus. I did try.
Try harder,
the bird barked in a perfect imitation of Cleric Hun, who had once been a drill instructor in one, and Chi laughed. I can ask someone to take care of it for me when I get inside the walls. That is, if I can get inside the walls. Cleverness himself whistled, a disdainful sound.
Oh, you want to get in? There's nothing easier. Will you stand me a ride?
Oh, of course. Chi lifted their left shoulder slightly in invitation, and Cleverness himself glided down to secure his perch, his sharp nails knitting through the fabric of their indigo robe. He was heavier than almost brilliant, and his bulk actually blocked their vision on one side. But then they both got the balance.
All this, and you've lost weight, too, Cleverness himself said disapprovingly, flexing his feet on their shoulder. Let's get you inside so we can start feeding you up again.
Rice porridge and rice porridge and rice porridge and maybe a slice of toasted tofu if we've all been good, said Chi with a sigh. Where am I going?
Home, of course. Start walking.
Chapter 3. To Chi's uneasy surprise, Cleverness himself marched them down to the plain, over the footbridge that crossed the creek, then straight among the cluster of small blue and white striped pavilions that they had missed when they were staring at the mammoths in surprise. Planted at the center of the pavilions was a pole bearing an embroidered flag, that of a hound with a broad chest and a tiny curly tail facing right, one paw up. That's the flag of Northern Bell Pass, isn't it? Asked Chi. And Cleverness himself whistled disdainfully.
It surely is. More precisely, with its little paw up like that. It's the insignia of the Gull Clan.
Cute little dog, don't you think?
Who's got a cute little face? Who's got the most adorable little paws?
The last was uttered more loudly, pitched to Carrie. And suddenly there was a tall woman striding towards them out of the dim early evening. Her long robes looked too light for the evening chill, and too long for the outdoors, dragging in the grass. Despite that, she moved with an easy and menacing athleticism. Her head was half-shaved, one side as clean as a cleric's, the other side braided back to fall in long tails over her shoulder. By her side, there was a long and slender sword of the ceremonial sort, often used as a pointer. Though Chi had the sinking sensation that for this woman, a stabbing weapon was a stabbing weapon.
Keep a civil tongue in that beast's head, cleric, or I will cut it out, she snapped, and Chi hurriedly bowed.
What a welcome home. Forgive us, they began. But Cleverness himself shifted to the top of Chi's head, puffing up indignantly.
A beast, really? You know better than that, that I'm no beast. I'm a nation of Singing Hills, upon whose lands you are currently trespassing.
The woman's sharp eyes shifted to Cleverness himself, which would have been more of a relief if the hoopoe wasn't actually standing on G's head.
I'm an advocate of the Empire, escorted by a detachment of the Southern Regiment and traveling on legal business. There is no land on this continent where I am a trespasser.
Wrong again. Cleverness himself trilled.
Singing Hill stands on old promises made by greater than any you have ever spoken with, and it will stand long after you are gone. Something about that pricked the woman's anger. She could almost feel it shift. And they spread their hands out placatingly, even as they shifted one foot back to dodge or to run. "I am Cleric Chi of Singing Hills," they started hurriedly. "I've been traveling, and I'm only trying to return." "Then return," the woman said shortly. "And take your bird from this place before it says something you both have cause to regret." She could actually feel Cleverness himself getting ready to make some potentially fatal response to that. And before he could do so, they reached up to grab him off their head and hug him to their chest. Despite his size, he still felt delicate in their grasp, his heart buzzing like 1,000 flies, and they were careful not to crush him, even as they bowed again. "Impolite," Cleverness himself growled, pecking hard at Chi's hands, and it was, as rude as grabbing another cleric and covering their mouth. "Still alive," Chi hissed in response. "Now I'm getting out of here before." "You can come this way," said another voice, and Chi squeaked in surprise, letting go of Cleverness himself, who exploded out of their grasp and flapped hard in shock at the person who had gotten too close without either of them noticing. The other person fell back, letting Cleverness himself make a tight circle before landing on Chi's shoulder again. "Now who in the world are you?" he asked sternly. The newcomer was a woman, perhaps 5 or so years younger than Chi himself, dressed more simply than the other, but with the same hooded eyes and sharp features. Where the former had been stern, however, this woman was cheerful, with a wide mouth that seemed inclined to smile, and a patch of skin on her chin and her throat that was paler by far than the rest, ragged at the edges and leading up to her cheeks with island specks of white. "Vian Yi," she said by way of introduction. "I was introduced when we first showed up, but there was a lot going on that morning." "Corporal Vian Yi?" asked Chi, who had noticed the beaded braid of red mammoth fur coiled into a circle and pinned to her shoulder. "Yes, Corporal, that's correct. You've had some dealing with the Mammoth Corps, then?" "Some," Chi allowed, falling into step. "Though I have to say that I've never seen you so far south." "Oh, we don't like it much. It makes everyone cranky and tired, riders and mammoths both. Still, we get on all right. This time of year is better for it than some." Chi almost missed a step when they realized that Vi and Yi was leading them to the two mammoths that stood by the tall gate. Neither was saddled, and they were not tethered either, which Chi knew would allow them to come at a call or a whistle from the woman by their side. "Come here," Vi and Yi said, walking forward. "Come meet them. That is, unless you're afraid." Cleverness himself whistled mistrustfully, but he hopped down to Chi's shoulder again. His nails were sharp, and Chi had the idea that he wanted to spread a sheltering wing over them both, for all the good that would do. "It would be an honor," Chi said firmly, and it was the truth. They had met mammoths before in their travels in the north, and they knew very well that the only harm in a well-trained mammoth came at the command of their rider. Even knowing that, there was something more than a little intimidating about walking up to such large animals. One, the classic russet red, and the other, red with 4 showy white socks and a large white patch over her face that spread down to cover her trunk. They swung their trunks in a companionable way as Vi and Yi walked ahead, her hands open to pet first one and then the other. "Hello, my good girls," she said, her voice different from when she had been speaking to Chi. "Look at how lazy you've grown in the south. So lazy. Come here, cleric. You can pet Sho if you want. Bibi's still young and more temperamental." Chi approached slowly, aware of the two enormous heads swinging towards them. The patched mammoth, Sho, reached them before they even had made it to Vi and Yi's side, her trunk knocking against Chi's chest and hips. Her motions dislodged Cleverness himself, who fluttered up into the air before coming back down with a creative Hangdian curse.
"Oh, hello, Sho,"
said Chi, stroking her trunk, as they had seen Vi and Yi do.
"They're bigger than I thought they would be."
"You've seen the common breed, I expect," said Vi and Yi with casual condescension. "These two girls, they're royal mammoths. This isn't even as big as they'll get." Chi took in that information as Sho grumbled with pleasure at being petted. They had ridden along with a mammoth scout and her mammoth up north. Common mammoths were smaller, slimmer, and plenty dangerous when they were roused. They were deadly on a battlefield, especially in a familial herd, but it was the royal mammoths that were the line breakers, the ones that would shake the earth and break down iron gates and stone walls. As if reading Chi's thoughts, Viennyi nodded, leaning against Bibi's leg, as if she was at home on her own porch. The slight smile on her face never changed at all.
"Sho and I, we were at the fight down in the Laofeng marshes, you know, earlier this year. That was nasty. 4 days, nonstop pushing through the fun, being eaten alive by mosquitoes and gnats and who knows what else. Poor Sho got bitten so much her eyes swelled almost shut." She paused. "Still, we pushed through. And when we came to Haopi's fortress, we were so pissed we trampled it flat. 8 royal mammoths reduced that place to kindling in a count of 60. They'd brought the bandit Haopi to stand trial at the capital. He was the only one who had survived out of a cohort of almost 80 soldiers. 8 mammoths and a count of 60. Chi swallowed hard, realizing in a different way how big Sho was, even as she stuck one of the mobile fingers of her trunk into their pack to search for treats.
"That sounds very impressive," they said as steadily as they could, and Cleverness himself hissed softly by their ear.
"It is. Now, I have kept you from home long enough. You should get inside."
She considered Chi a moment before continuing.
"You seem sensible," she said. "I try to be sensible, too. I'm not always good at it, but I do try. But my sister's carrying a heavy load of cases for the throne, and back home, our grandmother died just 2 months ago, and our parents' generation is trying to figure out who's going to be running things for the next 20 years. It's a mess, you know?"
"I can imagine. I'm sorry for your loss."
"I appreciate it. My sister, though, she runs a little hot, you know? It seems like your head cleric, they do too. Maybe between the two of us, we can keep things civil. That might be for the best, don't you think?"
She managed to fish up a small smile, hoping that Cleverness himself could resist a caustic remark at that. The mammoths, as gentle as they were right this moment, were too big to allow much in the way of caustic remarks.
"Thank you for introducing me to Bibi and Sho, Corporal," they said. "I'll be on my way."
The toll gates were closed and bolted, but they were usually only open for festival days and the big pilgrimages. It was stranger to see the small gate barred, the one where the clerics and the traders went day to day. Chi tugged on the steel pole, producing a deep, brazen toll that summoned a teenage novice to glare out the peephole.
"Who is it?"
they said mistrustfully, and Chi started to speak, but Cleverness himself puffed up again. "You know very well who I am," he said, "and this is Cleric Chi, back from abroad. Open this door at once." Chi started to say that there was no need for that, but it got the door open, the novice behind it peering at Chi with wide eyes.
"Welcome home," they said belatedly. "Shall I send for someone to take your things?"
"No, thank you. I'm going to head straight to the administrative office before it gets too late." They started to walk on, and then they remembered when they had been a novice on door duty, greeting the traveling clerics fresh back from the road and from adventures they could only dream of. Now they understood why those clerics from their childhood were so nonchalant about their travels. There was really a lot more waiting for the ferry and trudging in the rain than there was arguing with tigers or being chased by rose moon ghouls, but still, there had been tigers and ghouls.
"Actually, wait just a minute."
Chi took off their pack, putting it on the ground, to pull out a bag of milk candy from Ning. The candies were a soft ivory white, covered with a delicate rice paper wrapper that melted in the mouth, and the paper bag itself bore the picture of a famous puppet theater character, the Rat Bandit. "Here, you can have this if you promise to share it with your friends." The novice nodded, torn between curiosity and being the kind of teenager who is excited about nothing. And she smiled. "Hope you like them," they said before walking on. "You're spoiling them," Cleverness himself muttered disapprovingly. "The traveling clerics used to spoil us, too. When they go out, they'll spoil the next lot. It's a big circle." As they made their way to the administrative office, however, they couldn't help thinking about the fairy tale books that were sold in the north, the ones parents bought to entertain their children with tales of Princess Morningstar, the Rat Bandit, and King Whale. Every story ended with a tiny picture of a mammoth following the last line of text, because mammoths come at the end, after stories, after dynasties, after empires. "After abbeys, too," she thought uneasily. And they looked around at the walls that seemed, through all their life, to be the most solid things in the world. The administrative office was typically helmed by one senior cleric and at least two, often three, clerics and whichever nation might be spared and interested in the work. It took a phenomenal amount of record-keeping to maintain an organization that was, frankly, all about record-keeping. And the office often hummed along with a kind of desperate good cheer that it would never be able to catch up with the world, let alone keep up with it. Tonight, however, the office was sunk in quiet, and the only person present was one of the lay sisters, a woman so old that she just blinked drowsily at Chi from her cot in the back before gesturing at the hooks where the room chits were kept and going back to sleep. Chi found a crate in which to deposit their stack of written documentation and took one of the room chits on their way out, their unease increasing. Where is everyone? The number of Singing Hills clerics fluctuated, with around half in the field and half at home at any one time. Some were posted permanently at the Abbey. Some were posted almost permanently away. But Chi couldn't think of a time when it had ever been this empty. "I'm going to drop off my things, and then I'm going straight to the aviary. Almost Brilliant will tell me what's going on." They made their way to the dormitories, matching the character on their chit to the one painted on the room door. All of the rooms contained a bed with baskets underneath for various personal items, a wash basin, and a writing box loaded with supplies. But some previous tenant had hung up a rather bad ink drawing of a hoopoe in flight as well. The beak was too large, and the legs stuck out like barbecue skewers. But something about the homely drawing made Chi smile as they unpacked their things. Hoopoes meant home. "I really should have a wash before I go to the aviary. Probably have a bite to eat, too. But I just need to see Almost Brilliant." The sky was black when they stepped back outside, but the moon was almost full and rising. It was probably still early enough that the aviary wouldn't be asleep yet. And even if it was, perhaps the doorkeeper could be asked to... Chi yelped as they were grabbed from behind and lifted halfway off their feet. They flailed for the ground, a half dozen panicked thoughts running through their head, starting with the mammoth scouts and ending with ghouls. But then there was a laugh, low and bright and delighted.
"Reflexes like that. How in the hells haven't you gotten knifed yet?"
"Sue!"
Chi spun around to grapple the cleric standing behind them, throwing their arms around them and hugging tight. Zu was taller than they were, steadier with their cane than other people were on 2 feet, and hugging them was a little like hugging a friendly tree. Burying their face in Zu's robes, they smelled ink and paper and peppery muscle liniments so sharp it made them sneeze. Chi stepped back, giving them a quick poke in the bicep. "Look at you. You're twice as big as when I was last home."
"Are you going to say how tall I've gotten to?"
"No, you're not tall. You've shrunk. You're positively tiny now. But, oh, Sue, it's so good to see you. What in the world is going on?"
Sue winced.
I take it you got a good eye full of what was going on at the gate?
You mean the woman from the Northern Bell Pass and the two royal mammoths she's got with her? Yes, they were pretty hard to miss.
Observant as ever. Actually, it's good that you made it home now. Come on, we should talk.
She started to object, because the nation and the aviary tended to turn in early. But something about the unaccustomed serious look on Zoo's face made them nod and fall into step. The familiar rhythm of Zoo's steps and the tap of their cane was another reminder. They were home, and they were with one of their favorite people in the world. Suddenly, Chi found themselves resentful of the mammoths at the gate in a way they hadn't been before. Before, they were alarmed and afraid. Now they were almost angry that someone had broken the pattern of home, let alone something as unnerving as war mammoths. Where is everyone? The office is empty, and I don't think I've seen more than 4 people since I got inside.
Yeah, well, that's the easy question. The Royal Engineers drained Snakehead Lake.
Seriously?
The whole thing. Took out the dam, the works. I guess they needed the water somewhere else, so they took it and left the town of Hoshur uncovered for the first time in about 300 years.
Chi's head spun at the image. The ancient towers of Hoshur rising up from the murky water, and all the doors thrown open to the light and the air. The Emperor of Iron and Gaul had ordered the flooding of the town so quickly that there were people who had never escaped, and now their bones were free to tell their secrets. There were clerics at Singing Hills who could read a lifetime in a single molar and half a tibia, and they must have had their calipers and their trowels packed the moment they heard. So how many?
Almost everyone who could travel. The Empress of Weed and Flood has given us a dispensation to work for 4 months, provided that we do so under the supervision of the Imperial censors. After that, they're running the water back in.
And whatever survived the first torrent probably won't survive the second.
Right. You should have seen it. It was like everyone stopped sleeping to pack. The Divine pulled in about every favor they could to get the trip outfitted. A literal brawl broke out over some old maps. It was probably the most excitement I've ever seen around here.
Until the mammoths showed up?
Honestly, after all that, the mammoths were an anticlimax. They're really very quiet and docile.
When they're not knocking down the walls of fortresses, Chi said impatiently. Zoo.
Right.
Zoo came to a halt, and Chi realized with a chill that they had come to the Remembrance Hall. The doors were carved with the little cats that guarded the path of the dead, and someone had left a long-burning taper on the step, scenting the air with beeswax and bitter dried marigolds.
Cleric Tian died 3 weeks ago.
Oh. Oh. Chi swallowed, expecting a rush of tears or a cry or anything that wasn't opening their mouth like a fish and making that silly sound. The floor suddenly felt very far away, and Zhu's face swam in front of their eyes as they blinked hard. Oh, they said again, and they didn't realize that their hands were clenched into fists until Zhu took one up to work it loose, their fingers smoothing the back of Chi's hand until it relaxed, slowly and reluctantly. How?
A cough. They picked it up last year. And it never quite went away. When they went fast. I promise you, and without pain. The infirmary saw to that. Myriad Virtues and I were with them every moment until the end.
She nodded. There were many places they had been where that would be reckoned a clean death. A quiet one in bed, and attended by people who cared. It was something people offered as a comfort. But dead was dead. And the only comfort... One more word, one more touch, was impossible. Can I?
Of course. I'll be out here. Take your time.
Chi took a taper from the jar by the door, lighting it from the one on the step before stepping out of their sandals. They didn't turn, as Zhu briefly clasped their shoulder. And they were struck, as they entered, by a moment of childish disbelief. Of course Cleric Tian could not be dead. It was silly to think that.
Cleric Tian was as tall as the poplars that grew by the creek. They were born old. They were as much a part of Singing Hills as the aviary, the tall curtain wall, the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?